right center net.
Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You guys put it in the win column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's do it. We are underway this hour on Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. Pat Steinberg along with you. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Save. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. And welcome to the Hot Stove Lounge here at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. Welcome to this hour of Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcast. Welcome to the Hot Stove Television Studio.
Wow.
I don't know if we're going to call it that, but we're doing some more testing down here. That's why we're not in the Groundworks downtown studio, but instead hanging out here at the Hot Stove Lounge. Instead, continue to get our step into the 21st century. We're continuing to get it all perfected. Looks like, and by the way, it looks pretty good in here, hey?
Not so bad.
They've done a pretty good job. Too bad for a broom closet.
I don't mind the fact that we're not doing this segment because now I can lean back. I can go hands in
You've
the hoodie.
I've got my hoodie.
I've got my hoodie on today. I learned my lesson from Tuesday's show, and now I can kick back, relax, and have a good time, pal.
Calgary may be without Anthony Mantha for a little bit. We'll see. Mantha left Mantha left Tuesday's win in Montreal with a lower body injury, got hurt in the first period and did not return. So we don't know what his situation is going to look like. We don't know if he'll be able to return or not. He did not practice Wednesday in Boston, did not play the final 40-plus minutes Tuesday in Montreal, and was not on in the line combinations, obviously, on Wednesday at practice either. So let's go over some of the options the Flames have if he does have to miss some time, if he does have to miss a few games. Let's maybe start if it's a short-term thing. Say it's just the Boston game on Thursday that he's out for sure. Do you recall somebody, or do you just roll with what you've got? Right now the Flames, on their 23-player roster, 8 defense, 13 forward, 2 goaltenders. If it's just a minor thing and he's only going to miss one game for sure and he's not able to suit up for Boston, but you think there's a chance he could suit up in Buffalo, do you do anything or do you just keep the same 23?
You'd have to keep the same 23 because the Calgary Flames right now are in a position where they would have needed a player to, if you're not putting him on IR, you can't free up that roster spot. And there are no waiver-exempt defensemen on this roster, if I'm not mistaken.
I mean, what you could you could still put them on IR and call somebody up, but the way that IR works is the day you get hurt, you have to be on IR for 7 days.
Right.
So he wouldn't be able to return until Tuesday of next week against Vancouver. So that would mean he'd miss 3 games. He would miss the Boston game, the Buffalo game, and the L.A. game if they were to put him on IR.
Right. So that wouldn't be ideal if you think it's a short-term situation where you would only miss one game. So with that, I think you're just okay with rolling the dice a little bit and going with the 12 forwards you currently have on your roster. You cross your fingers, you hope that there's no illness, or you hope that somebody doesn't tweak something in practice or in warm-up, and you go with the 12 forwards you have. And if the unfortunate event where, okay, one of your 12 forwards can't go, then you have the option to go with 11 forward, 7 defensemen, which probably isn't ideal, but if it's a one-game thing, you just kind of gut your way through it and away you go. And so from my perspective, and also the other trick here is, okay, getting somebody out to the East Coast. The Wranglers play later Wednesday, so do you scratch somebody and you try and get them on a plane? They've got to go east. They've got to fly 6-7 hours into Boston and then have them ready to go the next day. I think the simplest thing, if this is a short-term thing where you're evaluating Anthony Mantha day-to-day, I think you're probably okay with just going with the 12 forwards that you have.
Yeah, I mean, if it truly is day-to-day, then yeah, I think that's probably your best option. If it's more of a week, if it's more of a day-to-day thing but closer to a week, then I think you do go the IR road and you do bring somebody up and give yourself that cushion. you know, right now, because they're comfortable with Rooney playing and they're comfortable with Kirkland playing, a Rooney in the middle with Kirkland and Lomberg fourth yep. line, they'd be just fine with if it's only going to be for a game or two. And then, yeah, if somebody does get hurt while you're rolling with 12 forwards, then you can recall somebody very easily. But, yeah, if you're of the opinion that Mantha is truly day-to-day and is closer to the day than to the week, then I don't think you recall anybody. But let's say for the sake of this conversation they do have to. It's a fun exercise because it's not easy. It's not like there's just an obvious, no questions asked, well, they're going to recall player X and that's all there is to it. I think there's a real conversation to be had about what the best way to go is if you're the Flames, and a real conversation to have in terms of what player deserves it with who's played well on the Wranglers so far. The options, I mean, the option that I would go with, we talked a little bit about this in the first hour of Wednesday's Flames Talk on the roundtable. The obvious option for me is Klapka, because I think that he fits right in, gives you something you don't have. You know he's going to play. You know he's going to play to his role on that fourth line. So I just think putting Klapka in, and you can have a Kirkland or Rooney in the middle, Lomberg on the left, and Klapka on the right. I think that's the ideal fourth line the Flames coaching staff was looking at through training camp. I think that's the desired fourth line that they had kind of put in pencil prior to the Sam Hanzek situation turning itself into a real good story throughout camp. So Klapka would be at the top of my list. I just think he's the easiest guy to plug in. He didn't go back to the Wranglers based on merit. He went down to the American League, similar to Matt Coronato, yep. based on a numbers game. So for me, I'm going Klapka, and I'm bringing him back up for the time being if I have to recall somebody.
Yeah, I'll agree. He's sort of the default answer that you go, okay, well, he was just here. He got sent down because he had two players come off IR. He was effectively going to be your 13th forward. And do you want him sitting as frequently as he might have been projected to be? No, not so much. So you sent him down to the American Hockey League, let him get some minutes in with the Wranglers. And if something happens to pop up, whether it be injury or otherwise, he seems like a natural fit to come back up. And to your point, yeah, if you're looking for somebody to play that fourth line right wing, well, I don't think you're necessarily looking for an Anthony Mantha type profile player to replace Anthony Mantha. You can elevate Pospisil up the lineup,
right.
and you can bring in somebody for that fourth line that Martin Pospisil was briefly occupying. Well, Adam Klapka fits the bill of sort of everything you'd look for. As you mentioned, the long look that trio got together in training camp and the start of the season, where it's just like Lomberg on one wing, Klapka on the other, and now you have the luxury of deciding whether it's going to be Rooney or Kirkland down the middle. The boring, less fun, more automatic type set and forget answer would be Adam Klapka coming up if this turns out to be something that's more than like a 72-hour ailment yeah. for Anthony Mantha.
Yeah, it's just I think that there's a lot to be said about how he could pretty seamlessly come right back into the roster. He made the team out of camp on merit. He didn't really play himself back to the American League again, became victim of a numbers game because he's in his final year of waiver exemption. So that's the way the Flames went. But let's go through a few of the other options, because I don't think Klapka is the only option. How much consideration would you give Jacob Pelche in this conversation?
I wouldn't give him much, and that's not a slight on Jacob Pelche and the start he's had with the Calgary Wranglers. I want him to do what he's doing, and it looks like he's refound some confidence. He's got 10 assists in 11 games so far this season. Like, he has been taking the demotion or being put on waivers and then being assigned to the minors the right way by all accounts. And I wouldn't, like, for a lot of the reasons why Rory Cairns, for an example, wouldn't be a guy I'd look to call up who leads the Wranglers in scoring, has 9 goals in 11 games. Cairns isn't the profile for a guy that I'd want to bring up. Jacob Pelche is probably closer to that profile, but at the same time, I want him to get back to playing 18 to 20 minutes a night undisturbed for a couple of months to sort of refine his game a little bit. So, again, this isn't an indictment on Jacob Pelche or where I see him fit. He's just in a situation right now where I think he's rediscovering a lot of the things that made him effective and trying to get away from perhaps some habits or some profiles that weren't allowing him to be successful coming off of a season last year where he sustained 2 shoulder injuries and by all accounts it was sort of a lost development year. Jacob Pelche, for me, would be a guy that I kind of just go hands off a little bit, let Trent Cullen and his staff sort of, I don't want to say necessarily rebuild him, but let Pelche continue on in the groove that he is. For me, he wouldn't be an option. How about you?
I would let both Cairns and Pelche continue to cook in the American League. I would let them continue to put up points, gain confidence, and just be good players with the Wranglers, and let them build the confidence in themselves, yeah, in their game, all of that, to a point where maybe in the second half of the season you're recalling somebody. Maybe in the second half of the season those guys get a shot at the NHL. But I don't think you need to rush it. I mean, this is the most success Cairns has ever had at the American League. He's playing center right now. They don't need a center. If this guy is going to project to being a center down the road in the NHL, let him continue to play it at the American League level. I don't think, as exciting as it would be, I see it in my mentions on Twitter, I see it on the text line all the time. Oh, player X might be hurt, bring up Cairns. I don't think you have to right now. And I know that might be, that might be entering Killjoy territory, but like, let him continue to cook in the American League. Same thing with Pelche. Jacob Pelche's confidence and belief of, you know, what he can be in the NHL, I think it's been shaken over the last little bit. So let him continue to build back all the confidence he needs at the second highest level in the world. And then when you've got a whole lot more of that confidence built back up, then you can come back up to the NHL. It's still early. Like, we're still, the Wranglers have only played 11 games. Flames have only played 12 games, 13 or whatever it is. I just don't think it's something that you need to do right now. I think that you can wait on both Cairns and Pelche and let them continue to get more underneath their belt in the American League. Whereas Klapka, I think, is closer to what he's going to be at the NHL level. And so I don't have as much of a problem recalling him. Then the next guy I'll mention, same thing. Walker Duehr. I think Duehr is closer to what he's ever going to be
right
in the NHL. So I think bringing him up, playing him in a fourth-line role, or potentially putting him in a spot where he's in or out of the lineup and spend some time as a healthy scratch, like that, I think, is what Walker Duehr's role is going to be in the NHL as a full-timer if that happens. So, you know, Walker Duehr, Adam Klapka, recalling those guys, I don't think they need to build more confidence up in the American League. I think that they can be just as well served getting some of their development time at the NHL level.
Well, Walker Duehr shouldn't be short on confidence at the American Hockey League level with the start that he's had as well, because he's second in team scoring with 6 goals, 5 assists, 11 points in 11 games, a point per game player. And he's probably the one that maybe has slept on the most in this conversation that we're having, because he just was so inauspicious. I'm hoping that that's a word. I feel like it's
inauspicious.
A word. There we go. That's why you're the word man, and I just type things out on the computer every once in a while.
I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure it's inauspicious.
But I think we could probably agree that Walker Duehr had a little bit of a disappointing camp, and that put him in a position to be on the American Hockey League roster to start. But by all accounts, he's come out flying, and he's done a lot of the things that, you know, the coaching staff with the Wranglers have asked him to do in terms of, this is what will make you successful at the NHL level. This is what we want you to do at the American Hockey League level, so that if and when your time does come, you can jump up and you're not in a different role and you're not trying to figure out a different style of game based on what you're playing in the American Hockey League. So yeah, Walker Duehr would be one of those options as well. And I'm going to toss in one more. Like, there's no shortage here, and that's probably one of the luxury of having your American Hockey League team in the same city. Now, granted, the Calgary Flames are on the road, but just by way of being able to watch and observe on a lot closer sort of level. But another player that I would toss out into this conversation, and again, this is a testament to Trent Cullen, what he's been able to do with the Wranglers this season. Dryden Hunt's a near point-per-game player as well. And to be perfectly honest, if it weren't for the emergence of Coronado, Hanzik, and Klapka getting that up-push from your U24 group that we talk so much about, I would have had Dryden Hunt on my opening night roster, with how he played in camp, about how he goes about his game in all three zones, about at times, in if you're playing him in a top-six role, you're probably slotting him higher than you want, but he has the ability to go up and down your lineup. He'd be one of those guys. Dryden Hunt would be one of those guys that I would take a look at if you're running into a little bit of injury trouble. He'd be right up there for me in terms of the priority list for a recall.
The only thing about him is that he's got a left shot.
But you've got Lomberg, so Lomberg can play both sides.
I know,
so
but he's Lomberg's also a left shot.
Yeah.
Like Klapka's, they still don't have a lot of right shot guys at forward. That's all they have on defense.
Well, right now, is it just Kuzmenko and Coronado up?
Yep, because Mantha's hurt now. So Mantha's left shot too. Yeah, he's a right. He plays the
Klapka
right side.
Klapka would have been the third, but he was assigned.
So I mean, you're talking about very few right shot forwards on the team, and so I think Klapka gives you that option and gives you that ability to add something to your list because I feel like because Kuzmenko's a left wing who shoots right and you've got Mantha who's a right wing who shoots left. I think Klapka, because of that right shot, there's a little, maybe gives you a little bit of an edge over Hunt, but no, Hunt's another guy that I wrote down. I even wrote down Clark Bishop because we know he's a guy that can pop up and down between the NHL and American League. Hasn't as a member of the Flames organization, but has before when he was in the Senators organization. I think Bishop would be a guy that you could put in there if you really wanted to, but just of all the names we mentioned, some of the names I think they're better served to continue to grow and build confidence and just get more playing time and high leverage playing time in the American League, like Kerins, like Pelche. Then there are guys that would fit very well. Dewar and Klapka each have right shots. Hunt is a perfect – he is your perfect quad A guy right now because he is –
he's an ideal 13th forward.
He's a top six guy in the American League. He's a very productive American League player, and then he's able to translate his game to playing 9 minutes a night on a fourth line in the NHL. Those are guys you want in your organization, and that absolutely is what Hunt brings. He would be in the mix. If you've got an opportunity to get another right shot forward, and I'd probably lean that way. That's why I'd probably lean, if my power rankings, I'd probably go Klapka 1, Hunt 2, Dewar 3, Bishop 4, if I was recalling somebody.
You know what? I didn't leaderboard my choices, but having heard you spell it out there a little bit, I think that that would be mine as well, and I think that's probably the general likelihood of the order that we would see.
This text comes in, says, if you bring up Pelche, you have to wave him again to send him back down. Not correct, and I'm not trying to call this texter out, but Dan, only if, much like Justin Kirkland's situation, once you have cleared waivers the first time, which Pelche did, when you are recalled to the NHL, any player who has cleared waivers already has an exemption period of 30 days on the NHL roster or 10 games on the NHL roster. So if Pelche were to only come up for two games, they could send him back to the American League without any without him needing to clear waivers. So he would have to be up for a certain amount of time for his waiver status to kick back in.
And all the names we've mentioned do not require waivers to go back. As you mentioned, Walker Dewar is in that, Dryden Hunt's in that, Jacob Pelche is in that, and of course, Klapka himself is waiver exempt for the time being.
Derek says, Bish, please. I think that he was trying to be funny, but also, I mean, your new captain.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's played well. All he does is score game-winning goals. And finally, this says, seems unfair to Kerins to not give him a look if he continues to play like this, especially when they didn't give him one preseason to show himself off. If he's still a point-per-game guy after 20 games, he deserves a look no matter how short. I'm not suggesting that he isn't deserving. I'm just suggesting sometimes you got to do what's best for your development. And
he's only 22 still. It's not like we're talking about a guy that's dominated the AHL for 2 or 3 years and it's time to give him an opportunity. He's a player that last season only had 16 goals and 32 points.
I mean, not only. He had a pretty good year last year.
That's good, but when you compare that to 9 goals and 12 points in 11 games, that's a drastic difference.
He's taken a big step this year, no doubt about it.
Which is why I wouldn't want to recall him, so you're not distracting him or you're not having him get away. And if he gets recalled to the Calgary Flames and you're playing him in a fourth-line role, you're asking him to do very different things than you're asking him to do with the Wranglers.
Well, and again, he's playing center on the Wranglers. They drafted him as a center. He would likely be playing wing if he came up to the Flames. I just feel like keeping Kerins in the American League right now, not because he's not having a good start, not because he hasn't opened eyes, has nothing more to do other than the fact that let him keep on building confidence at the position you want him to play potentially at the highest level if he gets there. And I just, there's no need to rush it. You don't need, every player who is having a good season in the American League doesn't need to be the first guy that comes up. You can still bring guys up to fit roles and to fit your NHL team and not put a young man in a spot where maybe Like, what happens if you bring Cairns up? He has two rough games, messes with his confidence, and now all of a sudden that's in his head coming back to the American League.
Well, just, and the messaging, too.
I think
too.
You want to keep him in the AHL for now.
The messaging from Ryan Huska versus what Trent Cull is messaging to him, if Cairns were to go up, his role would be different, so the messaging becomes different, and then he's getting inconsistent sort of guidelines in which to follow. He's had a great start. It's 11 games. Let's see what he does over the course of the next 11 games to the texter's point and see where he's at after that.
A few other things, and really just one other topic to touch on this hour before we hit our spin around the Pacific Division. I really like the way Dustin Wolf bounced back in Tuesday's win over Montreal, because for the first time he had a rough start in Utah. Allowed the 5 goals. One or two of those goalies, you might have said, Is that the greatest?
That was a rough start. There's no sugarcoating it. It wasn't his finest in the NHL this season.
It was his worst in the NHL this season. But he bounced back really nicely, and I thought he played quite well in that game against Montreal, specifically in the first period where Montreal kind of started on their heels, then got an early power play, didn't score on it, thanks largely in part to Dustin Wolf, and then took that game over for the remainder of the first period, and Wolf had to be dynamite. High dangers, medium dangers, just a lot of work for Wolf in the first period. He was equal to the task, made all 15 stops, and then was much less busy because Calgary's game got much better, but was much less busy in the final 40 minutes, but even still played quite well. I just thought it was a really nice bounce back from him, and kind of you shouldn't be surprised by that. I mean, he's had bad games in the American League. He's had bad games in junior, but every goalie, no matter how good, is going to have an off night, is going to have a night where he's not happy. He's going to have a night where his end-of-game save percentage is under 800. Like, it happens to Connor Hellebuck. It happens to Shesterkin. It happens to Vasilevsky. It happened to Dustin Wolf in Utah. Bounces back nicely and gives the Flames a real opportunity to win a very high-quality start against Montreal.
Whether it's a shift, a period, or a game, a goaltender, it's absolutely imperative that they're able to have a short memory. And to me, Dustin Wolf has that characteristic in his game, because it's typically not a long stretch where you've seen him struggle. And you mentioned all the levels he's played at. There's no real prolonged slump if you look at the game splits for Dustin Wolf. And everybody in a Calgary Flames jersey, particularly in that first period, was very thankful to have Dustin Wolf back there, because, again, you talk about having the ability to give your team a chance to win. It wouldn't have surprised me if that was a 3-0 or a 3-1 period for the Montreal Canadiens with how they came out, with how dangerous that power play looked. But the only person that didn't appreciate Dustin Wolf was former World Junior teammate Cole Caulfield, because he had a couple of one tees on the power play that Dustin Wolf just happened to be, you know, on one post, comes across. Oh, he's perfectly square to the shooter, and this high danger scoring chance, so at least what it looked like. Dustin Wolf's just square and set to the shooter and ready to kick it aside.
Just a couple interesting numbers in terms of what Wolf has done. Now, Calgary's special teams have not been great. We know that, but power play has not been great. Penalty kill has been really disappointing so far this year. But Dustin Wolf's 5-on-5 metrics deserve a little bit of love. So, number one, with goalies of more than 100 minutes played so far, which I think is a good sample size in November, Dustin Wolf, number 4 overall with a .952 save percentage. Only Cam Talbot, Anthony Stolarz, and Freddie Anderson have higher 5-on-5 save percentages, minimum 100 minutes played, than Dustin Wolf does. And this is the one that I think really is important. Dustin Wolf sits 8th overall at 5-on-5 goals saved above expected, courtesy of
Is that
Money
per
Puck.
60 minutes or overall?
Overall, 4.5.
Which is even more impressive because he split the crease. Yeah. He doesn't have the sample size of minutes to be even higher on that list.
4.5 goals saved above expected for Wolf in his games played so far. That includes, so ahead of him is maybe the guy who would probably deserves some early Vezina Trophy love. That guy in Anaheim, Lucas Dostal, is having an incredible start to the year, but so is Stolarz. So the guys who are ahead of Wolf on the list of 5-on-5 goals saved above expected: Dostal, Stolarz, Shesterkin, Talbot, Sorokin, Gustafson, and Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, just because I love
your
saying
favorite.
I try not to say full names all the time, except with that player. You have to.
Who is that again?
Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. It's way more fun than to just say Luukkonen. His first name, Ukko-Pekka. His last name, Luukkonen. But it's way more fun to say Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. He sits seventh overall. And then there's Dustin Wolff at 4.5 goals saved above expected. To your point, he has played the least games of that mix, tied for the least, actually, with Cam Talbot in Detroit. So, point is, Wolff has been very good for them. We should not be surprised that he bounced back the way that he did in Montreal.
No, it's part of his makeup. It's part of his DNA. It's part of his mentality where you got to shrug off a shot if it's a bad goal against or if it's a bad game on the whole. You got to park it and come back. And he's in a situation that I think is advantageous and pretty much a disadvantageous position, because when you're in a platoon and you're basically playing every second time, sometimes you need an extra day or two to sort of reset, and sometimes you want to just get right back in. So a credit to him as well, because there's probably been opportunities or times where he's been like, oh, I wish I could get back in the very next day, and he doesn't have that, so he's got to sit on a start like he had. And to his credit, again, comes back and was a major driving force for the Calgary Flames earning 2 points in Montreal.
Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg along with you. This hour of Flames Talk is underway, and McDonald's Canada is celebrating the return of hockey season with Fan Day deals every Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday. Tune into Flames Talk this coming Thursday for your chance to win a $100 McDonald's gift card that you can use to score a Big Mac, McChicken, or Filet-O-Fish Fan Day deal for just $4 plus tax every Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday, only through the McDonald's app. Download the McDonald's app to score great deals and earn My McDonald's rewards towards free McDonald's.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, this Wednesday edition of the program continues, and on a Wednesday, we always spin you around the Pacific Division with our buddy Jonathan Davis from NHL Network and VSiN Sports. He joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline right now. Hello, JD. How we doing?
Pat, we're doing fantastic. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm looking forward to your Flames betting tip to wrap up our conversation. We'll save that till the very end. And we have got a ton to dive into around the Pacific Division. Let's not waste any time because there's a lot going on. Let's start, first of all, I think the biggest news is the news in Edmonton. Connor McDavid, they said 2 to 3 weeks, and I guess we shouldn't be surprised. It's less than 2 to 3 weeks.
I mean, look, I don't think any of us really saw this one coming tonight. And here we are, what, 9 days later, and Connor is back on the ice. I'd like to find his doctor. Sign me up. I don't know if I could afford him. I mean, I know we're all, we all socialize medicine in Canada. But, that's a big boost for Edmonton. But, look, I mean, everyone's been joking that he was the problem at least for two games in Edmonton, as the Oilers seem to manage without him. But I think when you look at some of the underlying numbers, they really haven't been good for Edmonton. So yeah, anytime you can get the best player back in the world, it's always a good thing.
I mean, one guy's whose numbers have been good, Leon Draisaitl. Hey, he's done what he needs to do. Hey.
Well, yeah. I mean, again, the first two games, 6 points, 3 goals, 3 assists in those first two games. And for me, I look at the game against New Jersey where they were blank 3-0, and that was one where I was all over New Jersey from a betting standpoint. And I think, when you take a look at from game to game, that was a scheduled loss for the Edmonton Oilers. It was back-to-back. It was 3 games in 4 nights. New Jersey gets Calvin Pickard. It was just not a great spot for Edmonton. So I wasn't overly surprised that they found themselves on the losing end that night. But, okay, they get to reset tonight, and all they get are the Vegas Golden Knights, who, for some reason, talk about Jekyll and Hyde, 8-0 on home ice and 0-4 on the road.
Yeah. They have been that type of team so far this year. And I am curious to see what Vegas is able to bring to the table. Can you maybe a little bit more in depth on the team the Oilers will be playing in Vegas? just how, like, we see Mark Stone's numbers and how good they've been, but, like, just how impressive, how consistent a producer has Mark Stone been so far this year?
I mean, he's had points in every game, but their loss in the shootout, the overtime loss to Florida. I mean, that's pretty consistent. And Jack Eichel, I think, has had points in every game, but two. He's pointless in back-to-back games. There may have been one other game that Eichel's been held off the score sheet. But yeah, I mean, it's been a really good start. And then the other guy, you know, pay attention, you know, if you're watching Vegas games, one guy that you may not recognize the name, but we're starting to see a lot, is Pavel Dorofeev. And I think I've brought him up before
with you,
Pat, but this is a guy that has continued to shine, you know, with Victor Olofsson going down with injury. You know, Dorofeev has been around for a couple of seasons in Vegas, and he's really made the most of the opportunity given to him, playing on the line with Tomas Hertl, and then also getting time on that first power play unit.
Let's move to your neck of the woods in SoCal and the Los Angeles Kings, who come back home after a good little time on the road, hey?
I mean, I try to figure this team out. I say it to every year. Like, I don't know what they are, or, you know, because the team we saw that beat Nashville, and really more importantly, beat Minnesota last night on the back end of a back-to-back, That was an impressive win. I thought, you know, outside of being down 1-0 after the opening 20, man, they controlled that game last night. And Kevin Fiala continues to haunt his former teams. He scored against Nashville. He scored against Minnesota last night. Quentin Byfield finally gets his first goal of the season. So there were a lot of good things. And then your good buddy, Big Save Dave, I don't think he was supremely tested, but, you know, at the end of the day, he's in the nets for a 5-1 win. And I think, you know, for Riddick, to me, that's a significant win because, look, he was 3-3 coming into that game last night. But, you know, he got beat up by both Vegas and Toronto. And his other games that he had played, he had two against San Jose, one against Anaheim, and one against Montreal. So, he gets a quality opponent for the third time this season, and after giving up 10 goals in the first two games combined to Toronto and Vegas, he gives up just the one last night to Minnesota.
And Quentin Byfield finally has his first of the season too, hey?
Yeah, and you know, it doesn't look, I think, you know, for Byfield, it's been a real struggle for him. You know, I think that's only his third goal, Pat, in about 50 games going back to last year, and one of those goals came in the final game of the year against Chicago when Byfield was needing a goal to hit a $250,000 bonus. And the team that night did everything in their power to help him, and he got there. But, you know, it's a guy that, you know, was supposed to be one of the three centers on this team. And, you know, it lasted four games, and then he was moved up to the wing to go back to play with Kopitar and Kempe and didn't really get him going. And then they played San Jose. They were in San Jose in a game that they lost 4-2. And I believe it was like midway through that game, they put Byfield back to center with Warren Fogle and Alex LaFerriere, who has been the Kings' most consistent and top goal scorer this year. But Byfield seemed to gel with those guys. And he didn't score a goal, since being with them until last night. But I thought, you know, that line had been very good, had generated goals, especially LaFerriere, Fogle as well. Byfield hadn't scored a goal, but I thought, you know, he looked really good, or at least a lot better than he had early on, and he finally got rewarded last night against Minnesota.
What do we got coming up now for LA? So they got Vancouver on Thursday night, and then the Columbus Blue Jackets on Saturday.
Yeah, so Vancouver, you know, look, the Canucks are, you know, they've won their first two games out west, and God, they should. I mean, they played San Jose and Anaheim. So, you know, no excuse for the Canucks not to win those games. And we'll get to their story in a bit. But LA's dominated this series of late. I mean, they've won 5 of 6 against Vancouver. And they've won by at least 2 goals in 4 of those 5 wins. I don't know what to make of Vancouver yet, Pat, because, you know, they're 5-1 on the road. But when you take a look at their, you know, who they've beaten, it's Anaheim, San Jose, Chicago, Philadelphia. And they beat the Florida Panthers at the beginning of the year. But, you know, for the most part, it hasn't been very impressive. I never know what to expect from L.A. You know, as I said, the history would indicate that they, you know, history's on their side in this matchup. But, you know, we'll see what happens, you know, when they come back. Now, Columbus is their next opponent, Pat, after Vancouver. Here's an interesting stat. The last three teams that lost to the San Jose Sharks won their next game. It was Utah beating your Calgary Flames. It was L.A. beating the Vegas Golden Knights, and it was Chicago beating L.A. So if history is to repeat, we should see a Columbus victory on Saturday at Crypto.com.
I like that. That's actually a really cool stat. You mentioned Vancouver, 5-1 on the road. They've been able to play well away from home. Vancouver into Los Angeles on Thursday, and fresh off a milestone attained by Quinn Hughes.
Yeah, I mean, should we be surprised that, you know, that 300 helpers for Quinn Hughes, the third fastest to get to that mark, you know, behind what Bobby Orr and Brian Leetch. And once again, Quinn Hughes is making a case for, you know, Norris, and, you know, some would even argue, you know, making a case for the Hart Trophy. When you take a look at his numbers and how the, you know, how the Canucks play when Hughes is on the ice, and how they play and what their numbers are like when he's not on the ice. So, I mean, one of the bright spots for Vancouver, along with Kevin Lankinen, and then, you know, Jake DeBrusk has now scored in back-to-back games after going the first nine without a goal. But, I mean, look, that's Jake DeBrusk. I mean, Bruins fans have seen that story, you know, throughout his career in Boston. You know, when this guy gets on a heater, the goals just keep coming and coming and coming. So Vancouver is hoping that they'll benefit from that. And then, you know, Elias Pettersson had a goal last night, and I thought he looked solid. And had six shots on goal. I think, Pat, I sent you the numbers. I don't remember them off the top of my head. I think he had 15 shots on goal prior to last night. He had six last night. And look, against an Anaheim team, it's not surprising that someone's going to, you know, ramp up their shot total. You know, just to kind of tie it into Lucas Dostal, Pat, he's had three games this year where he's made 40 or more saves. I think the Ducks have been outshot like 136-64, and they've earned four of a possible 6 points, thanks to Dostal. One win and two bonus points.
Last one on Vancouver, and that is Dakota Joshua. Where are we on his return and being able to play and get back in the lineup?
Well, I saw a story from Ian McIntyre earlier today on Twitter or X, and just saying that Joshua did not practice today. The thought was that there was a good chance that he was going to play on Thursday, or at least that was the prevailing thought. But Tockett says did not practice today, will not play Thursday. Said it's not an issue of a setback, but his debut for now will be put, you know, will go at least one more game.
Okay. We're chatting with Jonathan Davis. He is our Pacific Division insider from NHL Network and VSiN Sports. Let's head to Seattle. Why are they the first thing that you have on our topics today is Seattle Kraken Islanders West. What does this mean?
Well, look, I can't take full credit for that. I have to credit. I heard Frank Cervelli on with Halford and Brough this morning. And when he said it, I was like, oh, my God, he's right. I mean, they're just that team that's mediocre. And, we were going to see, you know, the numbers early on look like, okay, the offense is starting to pick up. You know, we are seeing more depth scoring from this team. They've got some pretty decent numbers. I mean, look, Jared McCann's got six goals this year. He's on pace for 35, which, you know, puts him in that area, you know, where you would expect him to be. But, you know, look, at the end of the day, Pat, I mean, it's been a real struggle. What they've lost, what is it now, 7 of 8 games. They've scored, 6 goals in the losses. And they scored 8 goals in that win against Montreal, or 8 goals, 8 goals in the win, 10 goals in the 8 losses. And then, you know, they were shut out in back-to-back games. It's been pretty ugly for the Kraken. We're still seeing a lot of the same things. So when I say Islanders East, I mean, you know, look, they can have a game like they did against Montreal, but I don't know. You know, you watch them play, and like, unless I've got a wager on an Islanders game, for whatever reason, I can't watch them. And I really want to watch Seattle play, but they're not a fun team to watch right now.
What's happening with Vince Dunn?
Yeah, that's a big loss. I mean, and that ties into their struggles. I mean, Vince Dunn, lower body injury that he suffered back in October. He's been out about a month. You know, he's missed 9 games. So when you take a look at the struggles of the Kraken and you know, only, you know, 7 wins or 7 losses in their last 8 games, you know, that would explain part of their struggles. You know, losing, you know, Dunn, you know, arguably what, their second best defenseman. You've got, or one of their top two with Montour. Then you've also got Adam Larson. But that's a big loss. Now, my thing is, Pat, and you know, I've had this conversation with people here in LA with the loss of Drew Doughty. If one guy is going to affect you that much, then you're not as good as you thought you were. And, you know, Seattle needs to be able to overcome, find a way to overcome a loss like that. And they just haven't been able to. They've been getting really good goaltending from Joey DeCord. He's kept them in most games, but right now, yeah, they're scuffling, and they're scuffling to score goals. You know, other than that 8 goal outburst that they had against the Canadians. But Pat, I mean, I know you guys had to go tooth and nail and stole one last night, but you know, Montreal has been very leaky all year.
Have they ever? That is a very leaky hockey team. Zero doubt yeah. about that. Let's wrap up with a couple of hits on the other California teams. We've already hit on LA. In Anaheim, boy, they've all of a sudden run into a bit of a dry spell offensively, hey?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's 2 goals or less in 3 straight and 6 of 8. And Troy Terry, you know, it's been a decent year for Terry. I mean, he leads the team with 10 points. But, Pat, when you go through every team in the NHL, as I did earlier today, Terry's got 10 to lead the Ducks. Forsberg has 10 to lead the Predators. And Jared McCann's got 10 to lead Seattle. That's the lowest in the NHL. Now, there are a couple of teams with 11, but at the end of the day, 10 is the fewest of any team's point leader. And it kind of is very indicative to where Anaheim is at right now and not being able to produce offense. And I do wonder, you know, if this continues. I mean, like last year, the Ducks got off to a decent start, and then, you know, probably around mid-November, early December, that great start vanished. I do wonder if they can't turn things around. Would there be a coaching move, you know, in here in Anaheim? Again, I heard Frank this morning with Halford and Brough, and he referenced the fact that, you know, some of the players that he had talked to found Cronin really tough to deal with. Now, look, this team needed discipline. They need accountability. But maybe the message is being lost. And, you know, I think that it wouldn't shock me, you know, if this production keeps the way it is, that they would make a coaching change.
What can you, we'll only touch briefly on San Jose. Good to see them get Macklin Celebrini back. But what's the significance of what Vitek Vanacek just did?
Well, you know, I watched that game last night because I thought, you know, it was like, you know, for me, Celebrini's back. You got Adam Fantilli on the other side. You know, that's reason for me to want to watch, you know, the Sharks and the Jackets. But it was Vitek Vanacek that stole the show. He made 50 saves last night. And with that overtime win, he becomes the first goalie to make 40 or more saves, allow 1 goal or less, and have an assist on the OT winner. So there hasn't been a lot to get excited about in San Jose since opening night with Celebrini. Yeah. Had the goal and the assist, but there was reason for excitement last night in that overtime win. Vanacek was really good.
Okay, and as I teased right at the outset, what's this Calgary Flames betting tip you've got for us? And not only do we bring you on as our Pacific Division insider, but you're the NHL guy over at VSiN Sports. You got to give us a little bit of a tidbit here.
Pat, I gave it to you the night that Calgary and Utah played. You play a team that's been shut out. When a team has been shut out, the next game you play the first period over the total goals of 1.5. Right now that's clicking at a 17-6 rate to start the season. So Calgary has got Boston tomorrow in Boston. The Bruins are coming off being shut out by the Maple Leafs. So play the first period over 1.5. I think there's another game that fits that same criteria. I can't remember it off the top of my head. But for Flames fans, yeah, first period over 1.5.
Okay. I like that. So that is that's coming into the game.
Now, do you remember
Boston?
The Utah game, Pat?
I do, and it hit.
Remember how we
– I do?
Yeah, with like 1.8 seconds to go, but they all count.
Yeah, and you messaged me immediately – that it hit, and it did.
Yeah.
So I'm expecting a text on Thursday either way after the first period, okay?
Absolutely. Not even after. It'll be during the first period, I hope. Hope we don't have to sweat it out like we did in the Utah game.
Yeah, exactly, because that was a bit of a sweat. Good stuff, my friend. Yes. We will do it again next Wednesday. That is proper grammar. Great stuff, as always, yes. JD. Thanks so much.
Thank you, bud. Take care.
Jonathan Davis, NHL Network, VSiN Sports, joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline using the same secret recipe since 1975 at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Enjoying the game at home? Call for pickup or delivery at 403-248-3344. As we start to wrap things up this hour on Flames Talk, he is Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. Thanks to Shan and Connor, our outstanding producers this hour. And this hour starts to wrap up. It has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at calgarylockandsafe.com.